Welcome to Torah Dimecha Nafyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Lechem Aleph, Perakav Aleph, Chapter 21. Until now, all the studies about Achav have focused on the major issues: the Brit, the covenant with Sidon, marrying Yizebel, instituting Baal into Malchut Yisrael, the drought, and then the test on Har Carmel, the war against Aram. Perakav Aleph begins with a small story, one that doesn't even seem significant enough to mention in Tanakh, and yet it has a major impact. Sometime after the war, Achav is walking outside his palace in Shomron and notices a nearby vineyard. Like a good neighbor, he walks over to the owner, Navot HaYisraeli, and says to him, "Tana li et karmecha, vihi li lagan yarak, ki hu karov etel beiti." Give me your vineyard. It's close to my house, and I'd like to make it into a vegetable garden. I'll give you a better vineyard instead of this land. If you'd rather, I will buy you out. I'll give you money instead of your vineyard. A reasonable request from a wealthy neighbor who happens to also be the king. Achav is not expecting Navot's reply. Verse 3, Vayomer Navot al Achav. Navot turns to Achav and says, Chalila li me Hashem, mititi et nachlat avotai lach. I am forbidden from Hashem to give you my portion, the portion of my fathers. Achav feels incredibly disrespected by this answer. In his mind, he didn't even have to be so nice. He didn't have to give Navot such a fair offer to buy the land from him for a fair price. After all, he is the king. Navot should be honored to even be asked to give up his land for such a noble cause. He storms back to the palace. Verse 4, Vayavo Achav el beito sar v'zaif al hadavar asher diber alav Navot ha'Yisraeli. Achav comes to his palace, and he is sullen and enraged about what happened with Navot HaYisraeli. Vayomer, that Navot had said to him, Lo eten lecha nachlat avotai, that Navot had said, I won't give you my father's portion. Vayishkav al mitato, he lies down on his bed, vayasav et panav, v'lo achal lechem, he turns to the wall and doesn't eat. We notice Achav here, the description of the perek is of Achav as a child, lying on his bed, turning his face, not eating. Achav is described here as immature and angry about something that really he should have dealt with in a different way. It's interesting to realize that when Achav thinks back on Navot's explanation, he remembers it differently than the way it actually happened. Rav Yigal Ariel explains that Navot had three parts to his refusal. The first was Chalila li me Hashem. I'm actually not allowed to give away my nachala, my ancestral land. The Torah says not to. The Torah says not to sell land. Each family is supposed to live on their own land unless it's absolutely necessary to sell it. The second part of Navot's answer is mititi et nachlat avotai. The land is sentimental to me. I don't want to exchange it for another. It's where my family is from. It's my history. I actually care about this land. And then the third answer is lach. This part is personal. You aren't the person that I want to own my land. Maybe he doesn't like how he's asked for it. Maybe he doesn't like Achav. But that's the smallest part, and it's said last. When Achav is replaying the conversation back to himself, he remembers it differently. He completely discards the words, Chalila li me Hashem, that I'm not allowed to do this from Hashem, which was Navot's main answer and his strongest point. And he puts the last part, the personal part, the lach, he puts that first. And he remembers that Navot said to him, Lo eten la lecha et nachlat avotai, I won't give you the portion of my fathers. In Achav's mind, Navot's response was worse than it actually was, and it really had very little reasoning behind it. And notice Achav's reaction also. He is sarva za'ef, sullen and enraged, which just came up at the end of the last perek, when the Navi told him that he should not have let Ben-Hadad go free. And these are actually the only two times in Tanakh that this phrase is used. So clearly these stories are connected, and also one is after the other. Then it was a reaction to a Navi that told him that his life will be taken as a punishment for not killing Ben-Hadad. And now it's a response to being denied land that he wants. I think that these words are key to understanding what happens in this parak. In the last parak, Achav won over Aram in a tremendous battle. He was flying high, recapturing the honor of Malchut Yisrael, staring down his enemies, even having the strength to be able to let his nemesis free, the act of ultimate gevura, ultimate strength. And then the Navi tells him that he did it all wrong. By letting Ben-Hadad go, by claiming the victory, Achav had lost Hashem's support and was actually now, Achav is in his descent. He's on his way down. He didn't have this grand victory. The Navi snatches away the pleasure of the victory by reminding Ahav that he didn't actually even accomplish it. He really just owed Hashem for this victory. Ahav is sarva za'if. His wings are clipped. He can't be whole when he's reminded that he actually didn't have as much power as he felt that he had. And here, just outside his palace, it happens again. Navot, his neighbor, had the audacity to invoke God's name in denying Ahav some land that caught his fancy. Who cares about nachalot? Who cares about ancestral portions when the king wants something? If Navot is invoking Hashem, it's an implicit criticism that Ahav was actually wrong to ask, because Ahav also should be following this. The story of Ahav begins with Chiel building Yericho, destroying the monument to the idea that Hashem actually owns Eretz Yisrael. He conquered it, not us, and it is our job to serve him while we were here and create a moral society. The king is a servant of Hashem, like everyone else. He has power only insofar that he can help the country with his power, but not to enrich himself. Navot is the conscience that needs to be shut down. Just like the Navi, he's clipping Ahav's wings, reminding him that Hashem is more powerful than him, that there are laws that Ahav can't break. Like the building of Yericho, erasing Hashem from the picture gives Ahav more power, and erasing Navot from the picture gives Ahav more power as well. So there he is, sulking in his house, and we don't know what Ahav would have done with his bad feelings, except that Yizebel walks in. And she comes over, v'tavo elav Yizebel ishto, Yizebel's wife comes over, v'titaber elav, and she says, Ma zeruchacha sara v'inchal cholechem? Why do you look so down? Why aren't you eating? And he turns to her in Pasuk Vav, in verse 6, v'daber eleha. He says, well, you know, ki adaber navot ha-Yisraeli, I was speaking to Navot, you know, our neighbor, v'amar lo, t'nali et karmacha b'kesef, o'im chafetz ata et nelachat karam tachtav. I told Navot, I'll buy your vineyard from you, or if you want, I'll give you even a better one. V'yomer, and he turned to me, and he had the audacity to say, lo aten lecha et karmi, I won't give you my vineyard. Navot's reasoning about nachalot, family history, this being from Hashem, all gone. It's all personal now. Lo aten lecha et karmi, I won't give you my vineyard. That's all that's left from Navot's original answer. Here's a man who's offered a very fair deal, and he won't do it for no other reason than he wanted to bring down the king's honor. To Yizebel's ears, this is crazy. A king doesn't sit back and sulk when somebody is basically rebelling. Why would you stand for this, Ahav? Vatomer elav Yizebel ishto, ata ata tasem lucha al Yisrael. You are now going to establish your kingdom on Israel. This, you can't stand for this. Kumechol lechem, get up, eat bread, ve'yitab lucha, you should feel good, ani eten lecha et karam Navot ha-Yisraeli, I will get you that vineyard of Navot. The irony is palpable. He's now ready to establish his kingdom by leaving the scene and letting her take care of everything. That will certainly show what a strong king he is. Anyway, Ahav is happy to oblige and keep his hands clean. He doesn't want to know more than he has to know. It's important to both of them that he remain in the dark. Yizebel then gets to work. She writes a letter in Ahav's name and signs it with his seal. Again, the irony, now you're going to become king, as she slowly usurps all the powers of the kingship. And she sends a letter to the elders of Navot's town. She tells them to find two men that will agree to act as witnesses, two Anshei Belial, two bad guys. They will stand before the judge in Navot city and testify that Navot cursed Hashem and the king. The elders put Yizebel's plan into place. The judges hear the testimony and convict Navot of treason, and they stone him. They send back word to Yizebel that the deed is done. She goes to find Ahav in Pasuk Tetva, verse 15, Vayhi kishmo Yizebel ki sukal Navot vameit. When Yizebel hears that Navot was stoned and now has died, vatomer Yizebel al Ahav, Yizebel says to Ahav, Kum resh et karam Navot ha-Yisraeli. Get up, go inherit Navot's vineyard. Asher me'ein latet lecha b'kesef, the one that he did not refuse to give you for money. Well, now he's giving it to you without money. Ke'ein Navot chai ki'im meit. Navot is no longer alive. Rather, he is dead. Ahav asks no questions, does not comment on how convenient it is that Navot happened to die right after he told Yizebel that he wanted the vineyard. He doesn't even say thank you. Rather, he does what he's told, or what he actually manipulated her into doing. It's unclear what if Ahav actually put this plan into place to have Yizebel do this for him, or if he just happened upon her and she did it on her own. Anyway, Ahav knows that it's done. In Pasuk Tet Zayin, verse 16, Vayish kishmo Ahav ki meit Navot, when he hears that Navot is dead, Vayakam Ahav laredet el kerem Navot ha-Yisraeli l'rishto, he gets up to go down to the vineyard of Navot to inherit it. And I hope you're noticing these words, the getting up and the going down and the getting up and the going down. And Achav really is going down here. The story could end here. It's such a small incident compared with the 127,000 dead Arameans of the last Perek. It's so small compared to the fact that Achav has instituted Baal worship as the national religion and married Izebel, who brought it with her. Really, we could just not mention it at all in Tanakh, but it's actually not small. Eliyahu, who we haven't seen since he left with Elisha, suddenly reappears on the scene and confronts Achav at Karen Nevo, where he's gone to inherit it, and he forces him to grapple with what he's done. Verse 19. Hashem says to Eliyahu, Dibarte lev lemor, go to Achav, he's at Karem Navot, and say to him, Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Haratzachta v'gam yarashta? Have you murdered, and now you're also going to inherit? V'dibarte lev lemor, and tell him furthermore, Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, v'makom asher lakakua klavim et dam Navot, iloku haklavim et damcha gamata. In the place that the dogs have licked the blood of Navot, the dogs will lick your blood also. These words, Haratzachta v'gam yarashta, have you murdered and also inherited, are a stunning indictment of Achav, and they have actually entered the Hebrew language as a phrase that means, have you done one terrible thing built on a second terrible thing? Eliyahu is accusing Achav of the whole thing, the murder of Navot, the overreach of a king, the wanting and coveting of someone else's property and going after it no matter what moral codes need to be broken. We also have Achav's punishment couched in a Mida Keneged Mida language, measure for measure. Just like Navot died in a gruesome fashion, and that was your fault, the dogs licking his blood, you too will not escape a terrible death. Achav responds to Eliyahu in a parallel fashion to what he said to Eliyahu before Har Carmel. If you remember, then he said to Eliyahu, Hataze Ocher Yisrael, Eliyahu, you're the enemy of Yisrael. And Eliyahu responds, no, Achav, you're the enemy. He does the same thing here in Pasukah, verse 20. Ve'omar Achav Eliyahu, Hamsatani Ivi, have you found me, my enemy? Oh, Eliyahu, you found me. Eliyahu, you're always out to get me. You always think the worst of me. And Mesudat David reads it slightly differently, and he explains that what Achav meant was, have you found me to be the enemy? Am I at fault? I did nothing. I don't even know what you're talking about. Izebel's the one who should be blamed. Or better yet, Eliyahu, you should be blamed because you always think the worst of me. You're always looking for anything bad to criticize me for. Eliyahu answers Achav Vayomer, Matzati. No, Achav, I did find you out. I'm right. You're the enemy, Achav. Yan hitmakercha lasot hara b'einei Hashem, because you sold yourself to do bad in the eyes of Hashem. Was it worth it, Achav, for a vineyard to sell your soul? It's always you. It is always you. Not only does the king need to take responsibility for his actions and can't claim ignorance when it's your responsibility not to be ignorant, but it was your fault that you brought her, Izebel, into the country to begin with. It was your decision to marry her and to become an idol worshiper and take on her idols. You know her personality. You even set it up by framing the story in a certain way that of course she was going to do something about it. At the end of the day, Achav, you are the king and it's you. Eliyahu continues and uses language from the end of Yeravam and Baasha's dynasty, what the Navi said to Yeravam and then what the Navi said to Baasha. This is the final straw. Achav's dynasty will be wiped out and there will be nothing left. After this announcement of punishment and a sum up of Achav's character and dynasty, the story takes a surprising turn in verse 27. Vayhi kishmoa Achav et hadvarim ha'ele, when Achav hears these words, something shifts. Vayikra begadav, he rips his clothes. Vayasim sakal b'saro, he puts on sackcloth. Vayitzom, he fasts. Vayishkav basak, and he lies in his sackcloth on the floor. Vayalech ad, and he walks bent over. Achav actually does tshuva. Not in the face of a miracle like Har Carmel or the war against Aram, and not in response to the Navi's rebuke, but in recognizing that he sunk to his lowest nature. When the realization sinks in of what he actually did to Navot, Achav is devastated. It's not about recognizing Hashem per se. It's about realizing what he allowed to happen to a fellow human being. Hashem then turns to Eliyahu in Pasukav Tet, verse 29, and he says, Hariota ki nechna Achav mipanai? Have you seen that Achav lowered himself before me? Ya'an ki nechna mipanai? Lo avi harabi amav. Because he lowered himself before me, I will not bring all this bad in his days. Rather, b'yamei bano avi hara'al beto. All his dynasty will be wiped out in the days of his son. What's the message to Eliyahu? Why does Hashem have to say to Eliyahu, did you see that Achav lowered himself? Achav is not going to be freed from his punishment. At the end of the day, he didn't repudiate idolatry. He didn't get rid of Baal worship or Izebel. But he had a moment of sincere tshuva, and Hashem is going to take it. Hashem wants to communicate this to Eliyahu and to the reader. Even though Achav, we know, will go back to being bad the next parak, at this moment, he is sincere. At this moment, he regrets deeply what he did, and Hashem will accept this tshuva and honor it. Even flawed teshuva from flawed people means something if it is sincere and real at the time it's done. The one question that remains is the one we started this with. Why is the story of Kerem Navot in Tanakh? Why is it that Achav loses his dynasty over this story and not over one of the more consequential sins that he did throughout his kingship? Perhaps the answer to this is also the reason why we've spent so much time with Achav and why Elio has been trying so hard to convince him throughout all these prakim to follow Hashem. Devarim Yedzayin, chapter 17, the laws of a king, warn the king about two issues. One is that the king's power has the potential to take him away from Hashem. He thinks that he's the supreme leader and he will not follow Hashem anymore. And the other is that the king's power has the potential to make him think that he is above other people, that he's better than them, that he's above the law. And these are really two sides of the same coin. Achav failed in the first category. He thought he was above Hashem. He worshipped idolatry. He built up Yericho. But we see how he treats Ovadia. We see that he's willing to go to Har Carmel, even though he hates Elio. His saving grace is that at the same time that he thought he was above Hashem, he did good for his people. He didn't think that he was above them. Even Ben-Hadad thinks of Achav as Malchei Chesed, a really good, nice king, a king who do kindness. And even Izebel knows that if she wants to get rid of Navot, she has to make a pretend court case. She can't just call him out and kill him. Overall, Achav's country was based on justice and fairness. Overall, in his relationship with the people, Achav was decent. And that is why Elio is fighting so hard to turn him back to Hashem as well. He could have been a hope for Malchut Yisrael. He could have been good in both ways, but it's the way he treats people in general that gives him all of these chances to come back to Hashem as well. The story of Navot is so important because it's his failure in this area. His power led him to reach the level of haratzachta v'gam yarashta. You've murdered an innocent person, and then you go and have the audacity to inherit his field as if you did nothing wrong. It's in this episode that Achav thought he was better than his fellow man. It's his overreach. And therefore, because of this seemingly small story, he loses his dynasty. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilo Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.